please do have a seat. And I realised when I stood up before I didn't introduce myself, so good morning. My name's Matt. I have the privilege of being a minister here at Maybridge. And additional welcome to our guests. I want to share a story with you this morning that Jesus told. And some people have called this the greatest short story ever written, ever come up with. And it's genius. And it's in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 15. And it might surprise you to learn as we go into this. This is Jesus speaking to a group of very self-righteous religious leaders. And you need to know that context. And he's questioning how they see God. Being very religious isn't helping them. And so Jesus tells this incredible story, and it captures something about what people are like and what God is like in a way that I've never seen anywhere else. Here's how the story begins. There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, "Father, give me my share of the estate." So he divided his property between them. So there's the beginning. This man has two sons, and what would normally happen in that culture is that when he died, the older son, if he had two, would get two-thirds of the estate, the money, the house, etc., and the younger son would get one-third. But the younger son comes to him, this is unprecedented, while he's still alive, and says, "I'd quite like my share now." This is so offensive. It's like saying to your dad, "I want my life to be like it would be if you were dead, please. I don't want you. I want your stuff. I want to spend your money." Now, the crowd listening to this gathered around Jesus would immediately have been shocked, shaking their heads. Jesus, right from the beginning, he sets them up to be against this younger son. Who does he think he is? Remember, these are the people listening are the so-called the good people, the religious people. And so their instinctive reaction would be, "What a terrible son. People like him, they're the problem in this world. Selfish people, too many of them." But in the story Jesus tells, imagine that you are the dad in the story. What emotions would you be going through when your son came to you like this? Anger, disappointment, deep sadness. But right from the beginning, the dad does not react in the way that he has the right to. He could just tell his son where to go. He could say, "No." He could use some strong language. But what he does is give the son exactly what he asks for. The Greek word originally used here for property was the word bios, which means life. Literally, the father divided his life between them. Story continues. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, "How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. I'll set out and go back to my father and say to him, 'Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.'" So the son takes his share, third, remember, and he heads off. And he ends up in a distant country. He puts physical distance between himself and his dad. He doesn't want his dad around. And he ends up in wild living. He's got wine and women and fast cars, and it's all a lot of fun. Until the day that it's not. The inheritance runs out. Being away from his dad, it seemed so appealing. "I can do what I like. I can make my own decisions. My own rules. Nobody tells me what to do. Amazing." It promised so much, but delivered so little. Eventually, the parties were over. The people that he thought were his friends have disappeared. And so he ends up feeding pigs. For a Jewish man, this is the lowest of the low. This is the worst job you can think of. And he's so desperate, he even wants to eat pig food. Imagine wanting to eat pig food, thinking, "Oh, that'd be good." No, this is a man without any money. Nobody cares about him enough to even give him that. And then it happens. He comes to his senses. Now, there's a lot of emotion in this story, but this is a moment of rationality. This is logical. He thinks, well, okay, things are bad. My dad's servants have loads of food. They've got enough. If I go to him and I say sorry, and maybe if I can work as one of the servants, well, that would definitely be better than this pig thing. So maybe I could do that. This son makes a number of mistakes. But the thing behind them all, and this is very important, is how he views his dad. He has no idea how much his dad loves him because he's so focused on his stuff and his money. He thinks, if I can go home, maybe I can kind of rejoin the business, the family, at the sort of on the bottom rung of the ladder. That's the maximum he expects from his dad. Maybe I could possibly be a servant if I play my cards right. Have you ever been in one of those situations where you've done something so bad that you rehearse an apology before you have to make it? I never have, but I don't know if you've ever been in that position. You think through, how do I word it? My wife's laughing at the back. Yeah, I've done this with you. You think through how to word it. The younger son does exactly that thing. I'm not worthy to be your son. I've sinned against heaven and against you. Big, big words, aren't they? But we know his motivation is that he's hungry. That's what prompted this. It wasn't necessarily some act of great soul searching. He's hungry. He's in need. He's sorry because his life isn't very good. So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him and kissed him. The son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. This is wonderful. While he was still a long way off, his dad saw him. The only way that could have happened is if his dad was looking, like looking out for him, maybe sat at the front of the house, hoping, one day is my son going to come home? And the moment he sees him, he runs, he sprints towards him. Now, in that culture, dads didn't run. It was seen as undignified. It was embarrassing. The whole community would have averted their eyes. This dad doesn't care. The fact that he goes to his son before the son has said anything tells us something too. He must have already forgiven the son before he came home. Now, if you've ever had to forgive somebody, and I'm sure you have, you'll know that it costs something. And the worse the offense, the bigger the cost. Not money, but emotionally speaking, it costs to forgive, doesn't it? To let the other person go and not resent them. And the father must have done that hard work before the son came home. The huge emotional cost of forgiveness has been dealt with in his soul. That's why when he sees the son, he runs, puts his arms around him, kisses him. And this act tells the whole community that his son is restored, that it's been reset again. He's back as part of the family. And it's only after that that the son squeezes out his rehearsed apology. And his words are true. What he's saying is true. He's not worthy of his dad. And maybe at this point he's got some genuine remorse. He's seen how he's been treated. And he still says it. But his dad doesn't seem particularly interested in his words. His dad says to the servants, quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate. Amazing moment. Now think about the different approaches the dad could have taken in this exact moment when the son comes home. He could be completely fair. He could say, well, son, it was your choice. I know I love you. I've always loved you, but you made your bed. Now you've got to lie in it. You're not my son anymore, and that was your choice. It's one thing he could do. Or he could be merciful. He could say, well, you've been a bad boy, but because I love you, I'm going to give you a chance. Tell you what, you work for me for a few years, be a servant. If you play your cards right over time, I could bring you back into the family, but you know, you're going to have to earn that. You're going to have to work your way up. What you did was really offensive, you know. Now, if the father had done that, everybody could look on and say, well, that's very kind of him. That's nice of him. That's merciful. You know, it's his son after all. But the third thing he could do is be gracious. Now, us Christians like the word grace, but it's often misunderstood. It means extravagant, over the top, unwarranted, unearned favor. It's just excessive love and goodness towards someone who not only hasn't earned it, but actively deserves the opposite. They deserve the bad stuff. It's like if someone owes you money and you don't just write off the debt, but you also give them a blank check. It's like wild, over the top. And the father has this massive party and he kills the fattened calf, which is the best meat he's got basically for special occasions. That's when it goes, it's not justice, it's further than mercy. And it does become grace. That's what the father's doing. What the father has done costs more than the calf. It costs him the price of forgiveness, taking the emotional pain onto himself and his reputation. And when he brings the younger son back into the family in his public way, he makes him an heir again. The family is now financially a third worse off than it was. But the younger son is again restored to a position where he can claim a third of what's left in the bank. That's bonkers, isn't it? And it affects everybody. The father would have to take the heat from the rest of the family, people who are not wanting to be as forgiving as he is. Now, this is where the story changes gear. So you could have a lovely story up to this point about a son who runs away and then he kind of reforms a bit and he comes home to his really kind dad. And if it was a film, this is where it would end with a big tearful reunion and then the sun setting and they live happily ever after. But here again is Jesus being the master storyteller, because it carries on. There's another important character. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. "Your brother has come," he replied, "and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound." The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, "Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours who has squandered your property with prostitutes comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him." The older son, he's still there. The older son, throughout all of this stuff that's happened, he was out in the field. In other words, he's working. He's focused on the family business. He hasn't asked for his share of the inheritance. He hasn't been the wild child. He hasn't wasted money. He's a good boy. Shouldn't we all be like him? Not a trick question. Actually, kind of is. The son is outside and he hears music and dancing and eating. And you kind of get the impression he's not the sort of person that likes celebrating stuff. That's not him. When he finds out what's happened, he's furious. He's furious because his dad has forgiven his brother. Somebody else's forgiveness fills him with rage. He doesn't want grace. He doesn't want mercy even. He wants fairness. And you can understand his point of view. He's been a good boy. His brother hasn't. The little brat should live with the consequences. On the surface, the older brother is very well behaved. But underneath, he's very dark. How he responds tells us how he really sees everything. He thinks, you can see through his words, he thinks love and forgiveness should be given purely on the basis of behavior. That's what he believes. He's been good. His brother has not. He's earned his dad's love and approval. He's entitled to it. His brother has not. I just imagine in the story, the older brother stood with his arms folded and his back to the family home when his dad comes out to plead with him. I said before, dads didn't run in that culture, but even more than that, they did not come and plead with their children. They told their children, they didn't plead with them. This is another huge concession. They're very different people, but this dad loves both of his sons. He bends over backwards for both of them, despite what they're like. So the dad pleads, but look at how the older son replies. All these years, I've been slaving for you. I've been slaving. That word says everything. He hasn't been working for his dad in appreciation for all the love and the great things he gets from him and to feed into the family business that he's going to inherit. He's been slaving. In other words, really, his dad owes him more than he's getting. So he thinks, I deserve a great life. I'm not being given what I should be getting for my incredible goodness. How does he not see this? Can you see that despite outward appearances, despite going through the right motions, obeying the rules, being sensible, the older son is absolutely full of pride and superiority and entitlement. And so because of that, he looks at his little brother and says, I would never do anything as bad as him. I'm a good person. Look at how he speaks of his brother. This son of yours. Not my brother, this son of yours. Can't even call him his brother. If the older brother had known himself, he would have realized, actually, I'm just as self-centered in my own way as my brother. I've just got different tactics. I've got no reason to feel superior if he'd known himself. He's just like the other brother. This is the great irony. He wants the same things. He wants the dad's stuff and his money. He doesn't want the dad. Look at that tiny glimpse of that. He says, you never even gave me a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. Now, bearing in mind, this older brother has never left and come back, and it doesn't seem like it's his birthday or anything. What is it he wants to celebrate? He wants to celebrate himself. And he doesn't want to do that with the dad. He doesn't want him involved. He just wants to celebrate with his friends. So he's very similar to his brother. They've just got different ways of getting there. The younger son takes what he can and runs. The older son plays the long game and thinks, well, if I slave away, dad owes me lots of nice things. Neither son has any idea how much their dad loves for them or what an enormous privilege that love is. They don't have a clue. The story ends with the father's words. My son, the father said, you're always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad, because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. Look at how the dad still speaks. My son, you're always with me. Everything I have is yours. Despite his attitude, just like with his brother, this dad is willing to give him everything he has. And the story ends with this wonderful dad giving his bitter, selfish son this gentle challenge. He's saying to him, I know you don't want me to forgive your brother, but I already have. And I'm celebrating unashamedly because he's home. You could join us. And Jesus ends the story there. Your brother is home. What are you going to do? He leaves the audience hanging. The younger son went off and then he came home and that's resolved. But at the end of the story, the older son is still outside the house. Is he going to come back inside? Now, Jesus leaves it hanging deliberately. Remember, his audience is this group of religious leaders. They are classic older brother types of people. They follow the rules. They look down on the people that don't. And Jesus is letting them finish the story. He's kind of implying, okay, you guys are like the older brother. What are you going to do? How are you going to respond? Will they come back in the house, so to speak, or are they going to stay out in the field sulking? So Jesus leaves it hanging, and that's the story. But at the beginning, I said this story communicates the Christian message like nothing else I know. I wonder if you picked that up all the way through, because Jesus was not just telling a story, of course. It had a bigger meaning. Think about the characters here. First, you've got the younger son, and he doesn't want to be restricted. He doesn't want rules, so he goes off to discover himself. Like, he has a gap year in the Far East or something. He's like, And he tries to find himself. And his mindset is different places, new people, new experiences. That's what I need, plus lots of money, of course. That will make me happy. A younger brother type person says things like the stuff I've got on the screen. A younger brother might say, but not admit out loud, nobody has the right to tell me anything. I decide what's right. I define myself. I say what my identity is and who I am. I'll find happiness by experiencing everything I want to experience. And the big problem in the world, when it comes down to it, is older brother types. They're the problem. Behind all this, what is this person trying to do? When you look at his life, the younger brother is trying to find something transcendent, something that brings his life a joy and a contentment that he's struggling to find. And the way this spiritually plays out in our society right now is that you stay as irreligious as possible. And you look at church, and from the outside, church looks like a gang of older brothers, doesn't it? Do people think that? Rules and conformity. And so, yeah, I'm going to stay away from that as far as possible. And it's completely understandable. But if that's you, and you can relate to that, and you think like that, I'm willing to bet that under the surface, you know that this is not producing the results that you're after. Eventually, the younger son in the story faces a crisis. If you're looking for contentment in sleeping with as many good-looking people as possible, or having amazing holidays, or getting the house of your dreams, or whatever, I think you know, whether you want to engage with it or not, that that's not enough. It's ultimately unsatisfying. And those are not all bad things, but you're afraid, you know, you could try everything and it eventually will not satisfy. It may be that you've even lived long enough, you've done life long enough, that you're very aware that just going and pursuing stuff like that doesn't work, doesn't fulfill. The younger son went to a distant land because it promised everything, but it didn't deliver. It never does in the end. But then secondly, of course, we've got the older son. He's responsible. He pays his taxes. He budgets sensibly. He appreciates discipline and hard work and being a good citizen. And his mindset is, if I do the right things, if I behave the right way, I'll get all the good I'm entitled to because I'll deserve it. I'll have earned it. And an older brother might think things like this. The world would be better if everyone was more like me in their ethics, their politics, their dress sense, and so on. I live so well, I deserve for great things to happen to me. People should see and acknowledge all the good that I bring. I'm glad that I'm better than that person over there. By the way, as soon as you do that with literally anybody, you are being an older brother. Even if it's an older brother. And you might also think, well, actually, the big problem in society is younger brother types. You know, when it comes down to it, they're the problem, not people like me. What's this person really looking for? He wants to be celebrated. He wants recognition. He wants people to know he's a good person, that he's done well, that his way is best. But why? Because there is something in us that means we desperately want to be valuable, to be worthwhile. We want someone, we may not even know who, to say, you're worth it. And so for older brother types, life is a constant comparison contest. Older brothers have to have the bigger bank balance, or win the board game, or show that they've done more housework, or have the better behaved kids, or pray more, or get the best grades. And every time they fail, it's crushing. Why? Because if it's their fault, if they failed, then maybe they're not good enough. And then every person around them, even those that they love, becomes a potential rival, somebody who's maybe more worthy. And that's why older brotherism leaves you lonely. I'm willing to bet you've experienced this. We're probably all more like one of the brothers, but we're probably all like both of them at different times, I would imagine. Depressing, eh? The most important character in the story, though, is the father, the dad. Now, you can probably tell he's supposed to represent what God is like to us. This is really important because you might be somebody who thinks that God is like the older brother in the story, that that's the sort of image of God that you have. And if he was like that, then maybe you'd be right to steer clear of him. But Jesus doesn't describe God that way. This dad is the sort of dad you'd love getting to know. Now, look at what the dad communicates in the story when he interacts with both of his sons. I'll give you everything I have. I'm waiting for you to come home. I don't care what you've done, good or bad, because I love you regardless. And I'll do whatever I can to be close to you. That's what he communicates throughout. And all this together, I think, if you kind of compiled it, communicates the Christian message, the heart of it, really well, which is this. We all reject the Father in our own ways. We pursue experiences and we seek joy in things that are limited and dissatisfying. And we justify ourselves by our good works or how successful we are in 1,000 different ways. And these things don't work. And yet this dad, God, loves us and will do anything he can to get us. That's what the story's about. That's what Christianity's about. It's the best news in the world. But how on earth could this happen? I mentioned earlier that for the father to embrace his sons, despite what they're like, would have taken a lot of hard work behind the scenes. We all know forgiving is hard. For God to embrace us means he has to deal with the pain of how we reject him. But he does. He has. Jesus told this story to a gang of older brother types who were concerned that he loved younger brother types too much. And they were the people that ended up killing him. But what nobody realized was that this was God as a father dealing with all the things that the dad in the story had to deal with. All the betrayal, the hurt, the anger, by placing it on Jesus. Jesus, it's incredible. He takes this on. He dies and rises again so that God can say to every one of us, I'll give you all that I have. I'm waiting for you to come home. I don't care how good or bad you've been. And I have done what is necessary to be close to you. It's already finished. And so all that remains for us is to consider, will we run home, even with mixed motives, like the younger son? Or will we stand outside in a huff, thinking that we know best, like the older son? The dad is waiting with open arms. If you're visiting this morning, I'm sure what we've said doesn't clear up every question you might have about the whole Christian thing. But all I can say is, please come back and explore further. This stuff is at the heart of everything that we want to be about. Everything else is secondary. We'd love as a church to be a place where you can check this out without pressure. We talk to me, talk to anybody who's got a lanyard, come to the Alpha course that we run. We've got lots of ways of doing this, and we'd love to have you. But also, if you're here today and you would call yourself a Christian, I think this passage might be one of the best things for clearing your head, for resetting. And it might be that you've lost your way a bit. You've kind of missed what God is like in the middle of other things. And maybe you've wandered away like the younger brother, and you're wondering, well, can I go back? Can I go back to the house? Yes. Or it might be that you've forgotten what God's like, and you're trying hard to be good, and you've made it all about effort and ticking the Christian boxes and doing this and that and the other. And no matter how hard you try, you're just like the older brother, and you're exhausted. Either way, wherever you are at the moment, whichever brother you're like at the moment, your dad is waiting for you to come home.